Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. You have caught us in the middle of a story arc. Cole, as with me as always, Cole, producer.
Hello there.
He is the producer and co-host extraordinaire. 102 issues of Hey Kids Comics. He's been here, and he I keep expecting him to go on to bigger and better things, but he just keeps coming back. So
I'm just unimaginative that way.
I like he. We are his charitable organization.
That's
so
right.
So thank you for that, Cole.
This is my cause. I every day before the we record a show, I dump a bottle of creamy Caesar dressing over my head.
It's a horrible joke. I don't mean to take anything away from Lou Gehrig's disease, but
I know that was really.
It's well, I was about to say it's the Hey Kids Comics Creamy Caesar Challenge. If you're out there,
on second thought, do not take this challenge.
Do not record the videos and do not post them to Facebook. I know it sounds like I'm telling you to do it by saying do not do it. Seriously, don't do it.
Please do it only in conjunction with the Ice Bucket Challenge and do ours first.
Because you're going to...
you can sort of douse off the creamy Caesar with the water and the
ice.
Nice.
Well played. So you catch us in the middle of a story arc. Challenge of the Super Fails. Last issue, we did Astonishing Fails, which is sort of our catch-all where we got to vent a little bit about great failures in comic books.
Yes, just that.
We haven't even scratched the surface of how bad it can get.
It can get a lot worse.
Tonight's is Dial Z for Zero. Again, thank you, Cole, for literally been hurrying a chariot race every topic that comes up. He just grabs onto it.
I had more fun just trying to come up with what approach we would take and to invoke as much as possible some classic comic titles.
Well, that being said,
and work them into a tragic version of themselves.
Cole is really excited for this story arc.
This is one that it was tempting to put it first, but I really had to think through the way this was going to play out. So that's why it's second, because I couldn't wait for three or four in the lineup.
This is for Cole is, this is the runner who gets to third, and then we're going to drive it on home later. But this is definitely going to be a run by the time the game's over. Sports reference, how did that, I don't know.
You need to go back and do another sports, Super Sports Ball.
We might have to revisit that at a very special project later. I think that might be a topic that comes back up sometime in October or November. So, Cole, being as this was your creation, your monster, tell us what is Dial Z for Zero all about?
Well, this is going to be where we talk about the absolute worst, most embarrassing, most dreadful, terrible characters.
Okay.
Ever to come out of comics.
Okay.
And granted, you know, in the long history of comics, we've gone through periods where nobody really cared that much. So, you know, some of these things are almost forgivable, but we're not going to go that far. We're not going to be that forgiving.
No, we're forgiving. We've gone to almost, I would say, 80 of our, well, more than that, 85, 90 of our 102 issues of Hey Kids Comics. We've been very forgiving.
Yes.
We've turned the other cheek to the comics industry. That is not this story arc.
No, this is where we really, we're not even to give, we're not even to give a pass on, well, it was a different time.
No.
In comics.
No.
If you couldn't Alan Moore it up back in 1957, then too bad. If you know, 46... was a jubilant period in this country, and the comics reflected it. If you wrote something bad, you're going to stand accused. I'm going to be like Ronan the Accuser. Come in with my big old hammer time.
He's Jedi Cold Dread.
That's right. I am the law.
I am the law.
That was sort of a combination of both Kyle Urban and
It was the Carl Urban Sylvester Stallone
combo
sandwich with a little bit of Angelo on the side.
That was Angelo's impersonation of both of them as an amalgamated character.
I can't believe he didn't get into the Judge Dredd Academy. I feel really bad for the guy.
He tried.
Too violent.
It was an exceptionally heavy year for applicants.
Too violent, they said. Too violent for the Judge Dredd Academy.
apparently the cardboard cutouts on the training range just weren't enough.
For Angelo.
Yeah, he then burst through the training range into a real street.
Well, when you scream, "Set my fist to phosphorus," and then start punching people...
Yeah, but the thing is, they had to admit he's got a heart of gold.
He does. They could.
True of everyone. There are people convalescing in the hospital as we speak who have to admit he's got a heart of gold.
That's right. They're like, oh, I don't hold it against him.
Yeah.
But you don't have an eye. You have an eye. You have half of an eye of the two that you went into this with. Yeah, but he left me with a half an eye. So
if he didn't have a heart of gold, I'd be completely blind. I would be eyeless.
Speaking of pointless characters, yeah. Angelo is a... So
just don't let him hear you saying that.
So take me off the top there. Where do you want to go first with this?
Well, there's a just
it's so hard.
Characters that you could talk about.
Well, so let me say this to start, right? The thing that bothers me about this is this whole idea, it's the happy days, Fonzie jumps the shark, bring the kid in when the ratings are low, characters, a lot of the time that I think that we talk about here.
Absolutely.
Sex it up. We need to sex up the comics. So I'll start.
Well, I want to point out when you mentioned the half an eye guy. It did immediately put me in the mind of a character from Batman.
Okay.
And, Batman has a rogues gallery that outside of Batman might often seem, some of the characters just seem ridiculous.
In any other world.
Yeah, Batman can get away with some of these. And then there are those characters that no one can get away with. Not even Batman. He may be the knight, but nobody, and I do mean nobody, can get away with the ten-eyed man.
Oh, the fingers.
Yes, the man with eyes in his fingers. Finger eyes.
Old finger eyes.
Old finger eyes is back. He apparently first appeared in 1970. So again, we're going back to the thing, just because it was the start of the 70s, new decade, does not mean you can have the ten-eyed man.
No.
But yeah, he apparently, I guess, went blind or something and... redirected his optic nerves to his fingertips.
Hey, in the land of the blind, the man with 10 eyes on his fingers is king. All right?
That's so true. That's so true.
But later, here's the thing, right? He was kind of a goof nuts character for a long time.
Well, I mean, how do you, let's say, for example, when you get a little cut on your hand or on your arm or something, or you have a sore spot, inevitably, it seems like that's the only place you ever happen to shoulder into something. you're trying to catch a closing door and you hit that sweet spot. I mean, how much worse is that when you can see it coming?
Granted, number one. Number two, he had to become a supervillain. He had to become a supervillain because... His prior job was a Michelin star restaurant prep chef, and
I thought you were about to steal my stenographer.
Oh no! But I'm glad we're on the same. I'm glad we're on the same page because when your arch nemesis is lemon juice, you've got a little bit of a
working in a seafood place. There are lots of lemons being
right.
used.
Right, he got kicked out of many a Red Lobster.
That's right.
I'm just saying.
He actually fought Man Bat apparently, but never fought a lemon.
Later, only to be, and I was just reading this actually, later to be sexed up by Grant Morrison.
Of course.
Because God forbid you don't get sexed up by Grant Morrison at some point. So thank you, Grant Morrison, for taking another crappy character and making him somewhat reasonable. That's somewhat
reasonable. In so many ways, I have a tremendous love for anyone who can take the absolute worst Hall of Shamers and turn them into something.
I always picture it as like the DC bullpen when Grant Morrison worked there. You know, like one of the, like they had to give like, it was the hazing of the intern. All right, take Crazy Quilt, speaking of a character that...
Oh, there we go, another Batman character.
Take this memo about Crazy Quilt over to Grant Morrison. All right, you got a 5-issue story arc in Batman that you got to work Crazy Quilt in as the arch nemesis and make him a real threat. And you just hear, son of a bitch, coming from the corner of... coming around the corner of the bullpen over there. So tell me about, can we talk about Crazy Quilt?
We can definitely, Crazy Quilt definitely fits the dynamic of this show. What? This is purpose built, because this show in and of itself is a crazy quilt of crappy characters.
What? Who, I'm not as familiar, I think, as you are with Crazy Quilt.
Oddly enough, Crazy Quilt's a good choice because he's another eyeball character.
Is he?
If I remember correctly. I think there was something to do with him being blind as well.
He was blind. What the hell, Batman?
Yeah. Apparently, when you look up Crazy Quilt on Wikipedia, you get actually Crazy Quilting first.
You do.
It's important to put in Crazy Quilt DC or something like
when
that.
Okay, so here's the thing. When you're a Batman villain and you go to Google and you type Crazy Quilt into Google and Crazy Quilt is not the... Crazy Quilt Batman villain is not the first hit you get... You're doing something wrong. All right? That's all I'm saying.
The really frightening thing is, when you do look up the Crazy Quilt character, the listing in on Wikipedia, first Crazy Quilt. But there was another?
Somebody took up the Crazy Quilt mantle.
That's right.
Oh! Not only did he fight Batman, but he was bested by the Boy Commandos a bunch of times too.
Yeah, I mean, that's really sad when your principal villain. I mean, he probably went out of his way to just like go and like knock over trash cans and cool hand Luke the parking meters and anything he could to just stick it to Gotham, just to get Batman's attention because you know. He kept getting arrested by regular cops.
Oh, okay.
And,
so
you know, he had to redeem himself after getting, you know, messed up seriously by the Boy Commandos.
We don't often read directly from websites, but I need to read this directly from this website, okay?
Absolutely.
He had a lair, and his lair was called a color dome, okay? And his color dome was equipped with what has been done. Now, this isn't me reading it off the website. This is just gleaned by the by something called the color organ. Here's the quote that came from a comic book that I'm reading directly off the website, though, okay? As it pertains to the color organ, from my fingers, I release fabulous symphonies of color.
Wow.
Oh,
he should invite Ten-Eyed Man over. He'd appreciate it the most.
Maybe Ten-Eyed Man could play his color organ.
Yeah. How?
Oh, lady. Oh.
You can... There's a slight forgiveness caveat.
Oh, no. Here, you said you weren't going to forgive. All right. What do you got?
I'm not going to give anybody a full pass.
Okay.
But if you were created by Jack Kirby, then you are like the top of the bad heap. So you're not moldering down there at the bottom where the compost is really happening.
Just
you're just
wait.
Up at the top with the fresh banana peels.
I'm going to get in trouble during that issue, by the way. Because I might have to talk about Jack Kirby being one of the best worst comic book creators.
Yes. But yeah, I think you know it's like that line from the "They Might Be Giants" song. It's just you know they become the nicest of the damned Jack Kirby.
Very nice. I think that's might be our first They Might Be Giants. Did you know that They Might Be Giants was my first concert I ever attended when I was 8 years
really?
Old?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it may have been the first CD I ever bought.
Great minds and all that.
Apollo 13.
There are some, by the way, there are some real winners out there, too. I mean, if you want to talk about just useless characters, okay? Just useless. I've gotta go on record at this point and say this, and it's not going to be popular, and it's not where you think I'm going to go, but I'm going to go Wonder Twins.
Oh, wow.
The Wonder Twins were pretty useless.
Yeah, I mean, as much as they brought something slightly better to the table, I mean, absent Gleek, it might have been a better still.
Right.
But they really, yeah. You know, the girl.
The girl, Tomax or Zaymot? Which one was it?
I can't remember which.
Jana?
Yeah, Jana is, you know, she's at least can bring something to the table. Because she can take on the shape of an eagle or an elephant or a killer whale or something if she's hanging out with Aquaman. One of those giant ass elephant seals.
Or the people hands whale that Jack Kirby
would
create.
Shape of a people hands whale from from Namor. But how often Zan or whatever his name is, Zan, he really can't do a lot. Because for one thing, most of the time, he's very much reliant on her.
Right.
And very much reliant on the fact that somehow that monkey has a superpower of spontaneously creating buckets. He didn't have the bucket on him when he got there. when there's a bucket needed, one appears out of the ether.
All three, it's like he has a monkey bag of holding. All three of those.
He's in his cape. It's like a collapsible bucket, like one of those canvas ones from the war. From the war.
Of the three characters in that trio, Jan, Jason, Gleek. Gleek is by far the most useful character because he pulls buckets out of thin air.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you never know if it's a proper metal bucket, especially.
Right, it's a pail.
Be like Boris the Blade and Snatch is like as heavy as good. If you don't work, you can always hit him with.
That's right. It's a weapon.
If it's a canvas bag, not so much. But if it's wet, you can give him a stinging slap.
You can give him a little locker room towel action. Just get the tip wet. Whack, whack. Don't shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Save it for the challenge. The nice thing, though, is, though, since we did sort of demean the I want to try to redeem ourselves here a little bit, they are ready to take the challenge, the ALS challenge, because...
Damn it.
Zan can turn himself into the form of ice water.
That they're at all times.
Yeah. I mean, granted, when you pour it over your head, it looks like you just upturned a bucket of grape Kool-Aid.
Oh, so gross.
And I have to give the Harvey Birdman made the best use of the character where Wonder Woman was having a bath and he was the bathwater.
So gross. I love that show. Why haven't I watched that show all the time? Is the question.
It's been ages. And where were you? I was the bathwater.
So, I gotta go with Jana Jace on this thing. So
I'll back you up on that one.
All right. There's something that I wanted. We've touched on this before on our crossover event and our kind of big event show, but it bears talking about right now, and that is in the early 90s there were two major events. On either side of the board, in DC and in Marvel, DC, Marvel had an annuals event that didn't really have a name per se, but the entire event, along with DC's Bloodlines, was to introduce a new character that had never been introduced before in each of the annuals. There are some real luminaries from either side that stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Squirrel Girl being one of them, and if you dare to say that Squirrel Girl is a useless character, I defy you. I defy you to say so.
Squirrel Girl is only a useless character in the sense that unless you need squirrels for a specific operation, then she becomes patently useless.
You tell me how many operations.
You tell me how the Kree-Skrull War might have fared better with the presence of Squirrel Girl amid the Avengers.
All right, I can do that. So, the Kree, or the Skrull Mothership, what you do is you take Squirrel Girl up there through some sort of conveyance method, you know, whether Doctor Strange puts the Hexam Hokum on her and flies her up there, or, you know, somebody, in one way or another, Captain Marvel gets her up there. First of all, I'm pretty sure she could have cured Captain Marvel's cancer with some squirrels. They could have been used as test animals. How many super diseases could be solved by her ability?
I know. The mind boggles, but...
But you get her on board the ship, and then you let the... Because here's the thing, right? The Skrulls. See, that's another thing right there. Skrulls. It's way too close.
What about Skrull Girl? You know, she's been mired in this lousy job at Starbucks for this...
she missed the
regular schedule, and less than full-time hours have forced her to really cut a lot of corners. And all this time, she has the amazing power of being able to control Skrulls. And even during invasion, she didn't realize her full potential.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's in Middle America. Skrull invasion really, it was an East-West Coast thing.
It really was. They were concentrating on the places that mattered to Skrulls.
To Skrulls.
I mean, to them, that was like the flyover part of America.
Right, and if she just would have known.
Skrull Armada ships.
If she just would have known.
Yeah.
But pretty much,
she seemed to have incredible prowess with some cows when she visited a field in New York. No one knew why.
Nice reference to the Skrull cows.
There you go.
But barring any, 90% of the characters that were introduced in both of these big cross company events,
yeah,
fall into the category of totally useless characters.
Well, and most of them would never be seen again. Not even Grant Morrison could save some of these characters, like Rad.
Rad.
You know, Rad never reappeared in the Legion of Superheroes under anyone's watch.
No. Rad. Damn it. But on the DC side, you know, the problem...
When you want to derail a show, just bring up Rad.
Just bring up Rad. Rad will just take everything into a horrible
power. It just
backspin.
Conversation ender.
But, you know, at least the Marvel side, they didn't have the temerity to make the whole thing an actual crossover. They were just like, here's some new characters. Love them or leave them. Irish Wolfhound. We'll put him in Guardians of the Galaxy. All right, he's done. Let's just drop it. You know, they wrote him... They wrote all these guys into continuity on the DC side. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's so true. And yeah, I mean, and on the Marvel side, you know, you got a trading card because this was the last time you'd ever see them. This was like a lot of baseball players, I guess. You know, it's like the rookie cards.
It's like rookies
they never went anywhere. That was it. They were gone.
They were like the fourth string. Pitcher,
yeah,
that never got any field time and then got bumped back down when his contract was over.
And they got to play one, you know, their whole career is typified by having appeared one time on a trading card and never again.
But they hold on to that trading card. They got stacks of those trading cards. Also typified by the most useless of superhero and supervillain accoutrement during this time period,
oh,
which would be the the need to have 35 patches on you or pouches on you at all times.
That, I think, yes, that definitely bears some mention, is the pouch inflation.
Pouch inflation, yes, yes.
It had set in.
The pouch bubble had burst.
Indeed it had. Why we needed a surfeit of pouches, no one has been able to adequately explain.
But chief among them is, I think, Bobby's favorite character from Bloodlines that I think bears mentioning yet again.
Oh?
Which would be Loose Cannon.
Ah.
The Mood Ring Hulk that changes color with his...
Oh, okay, yes.
The super strong Mood Ring Hulk that changes colors as he gets madder and madder. So good. So bad. So bad. So great. But yes, that's when we started thinking about this, my mind immediately went back to this idea of, you know, well, we need to sex up our universes. So let's introduce these characters that make absolutely no sense. And see if they stick. Let's just a bunch of monkeys with a bunch of darts and let's see if they stick. And some of them did. Squirrel Girl, Hitman came out of this. I do believe that Krillin stuck around for a while. Loose Cannon got his own little series, but for the most part, yeah, for the most part, awful, horrible, just non-event, and everything was awful. So,
okay, I'm gonna go out on a limb here.
All right, do it.
And I'm gonna dare to say.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Warrior.
Which one?
It wouldn't be so daring if it wasn't Guy Gardner.
Oh no, it's worthless. Useless.
Good. Okay.
I wholeheartedly agree with that statement.
Forcing this then.
Well, the thing about Guy Gardner Warrior is that Guy Gardner, first of all, Guy Gardner in and of himself is a useless character. I'll put that on the table right now. He's my least favorite Green Lantern. He exists because the Green Lantern Corps apparently needed like a Wolverine of Green Lanterns, like an edgy, I'd pop my collar up and roll cigarettes up in my sleeves. I'm the bad boy of the Green Lantern Corps.
It's kind of the Angelo of Green Lantern without the redeeming quality of the Heart of Gold.
Right. So that, number one, useless. Number two, when you make him the Warrior, he becomes even more worthless. So go on, explain yourself, justify this statement.
It just became sort of like, okay, we're going to take, you can take the lantern and the green away from Guy Gardner, but you can't stop him from being the heroic anti-hero or the anti or whatever he was. But then all of a sudden, he's got to have, like, the big thing also was putting crap all over people's bodies.
Yes.
Be it, I don't know, was it supposed to be tattoos? Was it supposed to be war paint? No one ever adequately explained why all of a sudden, and the trend continues sadly to this day, everyone turned into anime characters with different crap on their faces.
Right. And body parts that turn into stuff. We need that too.
Yeah, that was the other thing. So, you know, where one can begin, it was like, okay, let's make Guy Gardner even more extreme! And, you know, frankly, who cared?
Well, the origin of Guy Gardner Warrior, Extreme Gardner, like with Ultimate Warrior face paint, and like the shirtless, like hairy chest hanging out.
Yeah, the giant roid muscles and the...
Exactly.
The big veiny... reminds me of a character when we were back in the days when we were working for Diamond. We published a little mini comic with some of the people there, and one guy just did this one-page thing. It was super-powered it was Spasm, the super-powered anabolic steroid man. And it was very much in the vein, his artwork, very much like that kind of just overly muscled, overly veined, overly taut.
Yeah. Kind of. Just always ready to explode.
Yeah, exaggerated human form that was, like a melon, an overripe melon about to blow.
But he drank warrior water.
Did he?
Yeah, which I think was the earliest form of vitamin water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he drank warrior
like
water somewhere.
It was like the popular soda that apparently also, if you had the wherewithal to realize it, made you rubbery.
Right, how did that work? Can somebody explain
to me?
Nobody
else seemed to notice.
Was it a genetic thing? Was it just like if I go out and get a Mountain Dew Code Red and drink it, I can shoot fire from my eyes?
I'm kind of paraphrasing here because I'm doing this from memory, but I hated the name Elongated Man. I thought that was just such a, you know, what, have we run out of ideas?
Right.
And in the Who's Who entry, I specifically remember reading something like, Ralph Dibny was fascinated by Indian rubber men, like in the sideshow and stuff.
Okay.
And he figured out that all of them apparently universally drank Gin Gold Cola.
What? Oh, that's awful.
So, yeah, there you have it.
That's the worst. That's the worst thing.
As origins go, that is perhaps, you know, it's just lame on.
It looked nice. That was nice. I like that. Speaking of lame on, can we talk for a second about, speaking of Angelo? I'm going to take us down a path for Angelo. Can we talk for a second about, there was a series of characters back in the late 80s. The X universe really provided us with a veritable cornucopia of awful, useless characters. Just pretty much across the board. Anytime you need a useless character, look no further than the X-Men. They will provide. Life finds a way, Dr. Hammond. Life finds a way. There was a character by the name of Guido.
AKA Strong Guy.
Who went by the name of Strong Guy. Whose power was that he could be strong. That was his power. If you exist in the Marvel Universe and then you break that down into the, you know, the Venn diagram that is the X-Men portion, you have a glut of strong characters. Characters with above average strength. Do you really need another one? Apparently the answer is yes.
I think at the end of the day, you get a lot. I think Strong Guy got away a lot on personality on top of everything else. It's kind of like the little breakaway character that, like Exidor on Mork and Mindy. He's supposed to be a one-shot throwaway character, but everybody loved the character so much they kept bringing him back.
But apparently, Strong Guy is super
popular. Guy gets
like,
I'm going to go get a job for a week, and the next thing he knows, he's back every 6 weeks.
Well, the thing is, like, I give a pass to Dazzler or Jubilee.
I can't. I'm like Shatner. I can't get behind that.
Okay, I give a pass to Dazzler, because Dazzler can shoot lasers out of her fingers. I mean, that Dazzler's
only if there was music playing.
And that's fine. I'm with that. Because you can
so
get...
So your villain came with his own soundtrack, like he was in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
But I gotta figure at that time period, a lot of them did, Cole.
Well, I gotta figure... Yeah, I mean, my older brother had a great idea for an armored, like Iron Man-esque type character, but with more exaggerated giant armor that would have big loudspeakers on it and play Flight of the Valkyries while he was...
Nice.
I thought, that is brilliant. I want to see this character, just zooming in to save the day with his own soundtrack.
Well, during the supervillain boom, when you could get funding to do anything, as a supervillain, a large portion of your supervillain budget went to the band that followed you around and played your intro music whenever you walked into a fight scene or whenever somebody walked into your, it was like a house band.
Oh, gosh, that reminds me of a character. It was in one of the little indies that had come around that didn't like Now Comics or one of those guys.
Yeah.
And they had a character called Strike. And they had a thing where, some news media person is coming and asking about, the bad guy he just cold cocked or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, well, who are you? I'm Strike. And don't forget the exclamation point. I'm like, okay. yeah, that's...
That's much. You're much. You're Moss. You need to be less Moss.
You know, recently there's been a lot of buzz, big, gigantic tons of money coming in from the unexpected popularity of Michael Bay apparently not raping people's childhood
right.
enough that they could stay away.
Right.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a lot of people have voiced concern that Casey Jones was left out. The talk about your
that knock on your door is Eddie, by the way.
Yeah,
that's Eddie.
Super sports balls extraordinaire there. You know, he's got a little bit of everything with him. But I have to point out that as much as people like Casey Jones, he's got a predecessor.
Yes, he does. Yes, he
does. 1947's All-American Comics, perhaps one of the worst characters in all history.
Yep.
Aptly named. His real name is apparently Lawrence Croc.
Oh, is it?
And, apparently he could play any sport at an Olympic level.
What was the character's name?
And parlayed that into a life of crime, as any athlete, well, I mean, in all fairness, most of them do eventually.
just not necessarily super crime.
Not as a career, though. They just have a career record, as it were. But it's, of course, Sportsmaster, who actually fought the likes of Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah. No, later. Later.
I mean, how does Sportsmaster fight Green Lantern? Does he, like, go to Putt-Putt and steal all the yellow balls?
Well, here's the way they made him at least passable, is in the Young Justice cartoon that was on recently, he was a major villain. Major villain in the Young Justice cartoon, alongside, like, the likes of Ra's al Ghul and Deathstroke the Terminator, you had Sportsmaster. Because a Sportsmaster... If the Punisher has to go to Bill Goodman's Gun and Knife Show and underground, gun warehouses and CD people to get his weaponry, think about it. The Sportsmaster pretty much is like the Taskmaster, but if he goes to Dick's Sporting Goods, he's well-armed. Get you a javelin, get you some darts.
Oh, yeah, some darts. You know, I didn't even think about darts. Get Why not bring in the bar-based sports?
Bow and arrow. A sack full of baseballs.
He's equipped for almost anything. Like, should Aquaman come along, then just, you know, do some scuba or triathlon stuff, diving.
Now, don't get me wrong, right? Still one of the most useless characters in the DC universe.
Absolutely. But if you want somebody on your team for Super Sports Balls, when we revisit that, I'm calling Sportsmaster right now.
Oh, you can call
for
Sportsmaster.
For every one of the teams. I don't care what we're doing.
Well, what we're doing?
Curling.
I'm trying to think of a way that curling can be a super villain sport. Maybe, like...
he's got the broom of doom.
Nice. Nice. Maybe, like, you know, like Entrapment with Catherine Zeta-Jones, where she had to dip beneath the lasers. Maybe he can scoot like a stone through
irons,
all of the
whatever they call that thing. Apologies to curling countries
enthusiasts out there that listens to our show. So
hey, we've got some people dialing up every now and again from Scandinavian countries.
So. Yeah, we do. This is probably we might, if we ever get letters, this will bring them on. I gotta go. As much as I loved the test footage for the movie that might come out, as much as I enjoyed the miniseries that they created, and I did enjoy it. It was really funny, some parts. I've gotta say, in my top five useless characters of all comic books, Deadpool. Deadpool is in there.
I'll give you that. I really had little to no use for Deadpool.
When you get a character that shows up because Rob Liefeld decided that he needed to be creative for once, which is pretty much what happened, and made a, you know, and the thing about Deadpool that pisses me off is they've used him as a skeleton key. He has no real backstory. They've used him as a skeleton key. across the board for anything they need. So he was originally a regenerative super assassin.
Yeah.
He has no real superpowers besides healing. That was it.
Yeah. And apparently been very well trained, or at least, of course, well, you know, when you're heal all the time, who has time for training? You just go, you know, even a rank amateur, after a while, you can just sort of dumb your way into being the best super assassin.
Right. And honestly, if he was the best super assassin, we would have heard about him before 1992 or 3. I'm just putting that out there.
Well, those were the years that he was bumbling his way through his name.
But after that point, just any appellation you needed got tacked onto his lapels, you know? Just any, okay, so he's a member of Weapon X, all right. He's, you know, an X-Men, he's an X-Force, he tried out for the Avengers, he was on the Great Lakes Avengers. He, you know, whatever you needed, he could be your guy.
He could, if you needed a character in a hurry, Deadpool was likely available.
Because he was so useless that you could put him into any role. And you could write him because nobody, while everybody really cares about Deadpool, nobody really cares about Deadpool.
Yeah.
Nobody's having continuity fights about Deadpool the way that they're having them about Batman, or the way that they're having
So, for example, you know, Falcon becomes new Captain America, it becomes national news. You could just completely rewrite Deadpool, and no one would really care that much.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. He's so useless that nobody cares about him, but everybody really likes him, which kind of drives me crazy. You know, he's like the class clown in high school that was, you know, that was really sad all the time, but nobody knew it because nobody took the time to figure out who he was after he left school. You know, like, I put gum in your hair, I knocked your tray down, oh, there's poop in the tray, boo! And then he goes home and just, you know, writes in his journal and drinks red wine and talks about how lonely and sad he is, but nobody knows, because nobody's bothered to follow up with after the last bell rings. Right. He's fun to have around at a party, but that's it. I feel kind of bad for Deadpool after that now. I feel kind of bad for him.
Still,
okay.
He doesn't get a pass.
No pass.
But I will say, I do want to pause a moment and remember.
Oh, no.
Because they crossed my mind. I went and looked him up. I did not realize that this entire team, this is a super team from DC Comics that first appeared in Batman and the Outsiders Annual Number 1.
Oh, no.
Created by Mike Barr and Jim Aparo.
Okay.
And apparently, every single one of them is dead.
Oh, jeez. Nice. And they meant so much that you had no idea how dead they were.
Such a tragic group. And I'm speaking, of course, of the Force of July.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I mean, while I'm glad to know that they're all gone now, and we don't have to worry about them accidentally cropping up in continuity, even under Grant Morrison...
If anybody can do it.
it's still unfortunate that the Force of July. Back when I was in high school and college, my friend Steve, who's been on the show, he and I were coming up with this, you know, constantly. We were aspiring comic writers, and mainly we just came up with a bunch of characters. And it was many years later before I started trying to do anything with them.
Right.
Other than just, you know, some sketchy, skeletal idea of a storyline here and there. But at one point I was... I shot into this huge list of different characters and teams and stuff like that that ultimately led to the creation of the Atrocious Universe, which are characters that were deliberately terrible.
Right.
But that came out of him blasting me for these terrible group I'd come up with, an Egyptian-based group known as the Pyramid Powers. So I felt a little vindicated when... There was actually, even before I'd come up with the Pyramid Powers, the Force of July already existed. And maybe Steve knew this, because he was following Batman and the Outsiders. Maybe he had read this and feared for, you know, falling into that trap where you have Lady Liberty, Major Victory, Mayflower, Silent Majority, who is sort of, you know, the quiet Jamie Madrox of DC, apparently. Sparkler, who was the Jubilee of the group. Major Victory was the Vindicator / Guardian.
Right.
With his enhanced suit.
Uh-huh.
Lady Liberty, who was essentially American-made or... whatever from the Tick.
Liberty Bell
and,
or whatever.
And apparently they're all dead.
Well, good.
Vickery killed by Eclipso. Lady Liberty was killed by on Cobra's satellite. Silent Majority and an unknown number of duplicates were all killed on Cobra's satellite.
Well,
worst was like Sparkler was killed by an insane Dr. Light who
wow.
had a thing about young superheroes.
Right.
And I think, worst of all, poor Mayflower, who could control and grow plant life,
didn't make
got
it
rotted by Ravan of the Suicide Squad.
Okay. I was going to say, didn't make the trip over. Didn't make the trip over.
Ah, so she's literally pushing up the daisies now.
As we approach the end of the show, which, again, we're up
sad.
Against it once again.
Are we going to miss out on Antoine, a.k.a. Hypno Hustler?
I want you to go ahead and talk about Antoine. We'll wrap this. I got another little segment I want to do before the end, but we'll wrap this with Antoine the Hypno Hustler because I know you were excited. Okay. You know what? Well, there's two.
Before we do that, I do have to tell quickly about the character Wondar, who would later be known in Marvel 2-in-1 as Aquarium. Being in a character whose name began with A was in the first issue of Marvel Universe.
Right.
Where you got to discover all kinds of characters you never knew existed. And your first thought is, I didn't realize that Jesus was a superhero. As we work our way up the food chain, the next step would be also the first I'd ever heard him was in DC's Who's Who, the Duke of Oil.
The Duke of Oil. Which is
because
the best pun.
The Duke of Oil.
Which is
yes.
the best pun.
Read it and weep. The Duke of Oil was a robotic or cybernetic oil baron supervillain who fought the Outsiders. Again, I think Steve was trying to keep us from becoming what Batman the Outsiders was becoming.
what about the guy that you wrote me about?
Oh,
I don't want to get out of this before we talk about him.
Oh, my. And good thing I wrote to you because...
Because you don't remember?
It apparently was going to escape me with complete certainty.
What's the guy's name? You had written me... It was like a barbarian character or something?
Oh, indeed. Yes. I was actually flipping through some old Who's Who. Who was it? Mike Grell was going to be at a convention in the Dallas area. And I was... digging out some Who's Who to get him to autograph the pages with like Warlord and characters like that. And I think it may have been in the very, in fact, oddly enough, in the same issue with Ten-Eyed Man.
Of course.
If I'm not mistaken. No, it wasn't in this one. I just happened to pick that one up looking for the one I wanted, which of course was an issue of Who's Who featuring none other. And I think this is one that has Warlord in it as well. Yes, I stumble on this looking for the page with Warlord. Viking Commando.
Oh, yes.
Viking Commando first appeared in All Out War number 1. Back in the days when World War II comics were a thing, and you got stuff like Weird War and All Out War and Our Fighting Forces and America at War and War of the Wars and... what have you there. But yes, Viking Commando may or may not have been an actual Viking who was unable to proceed to Valhalla back in his own century when he was fighting the Hun and found himself quite alive and well in the 20th century in 1940s Europe and was apparently... stumbled upon by American troops who, when he overheard them referring to their German enemies as the Hun, he was more than happy to enlist. I'm not sure how one goes about seconding a Norwegian national to the American armed forces, but you know, during the war it was pretty much open season on anything, and so he had his powerful axe, but he was also proficient in machine guns and hand grenades and the ways of modern war as well. So Viking Commando.
Viking Commando. Now tell me about the Hypno Hustler.
The Hypno Hustler was a Spider-Man villain.
I remember him.
Apparently, he was Antoine Deslion. Deslion? Apparently, he was the lead singer of the Mercy Killers. And he decided to go ahead and he was apparently caught trying to rob this nightclub. And I guess at that moment decided he was going to become the Hypno Hustler. I just remember seeing on the racks at 7-Eleven the Spectacular Spider-Man issue with the Hypno Hustler on the cover. Apparently he has boots. He must have like big Kiss boots or something that emit knockout gas and have retractable knives in the soles.
Wow. Wow.
And he can perform mass hypnosis, apparently, with the aid of his guitar.
While we are on this topic,
as my guitar gently hypnotizes.
Hypnosis. While we're on the topic of useless Spider-Man villains, my favorite ever useless Spider-Man villain, and I have the comic that he first appears in, is a man named Jalome Beecher. Known as none other than Slide, the frictionless man.
Ah, Slide. Yes, he was wearing sort of the... apparently also, in addition to being frictionless, was unimaginative because he had like the least exciting...
It's like just this dull gray suit.
Yeah, with knee pads, apparently, as I recall.
Well, he is the supervillain equivalent of, you can't, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. So,
basically,
so
he just goes and annoys people.
Right, he can rob a bank and then just slide around. Just woo, woo. It's like trying to catch a mouse in the middle of the night. That's what he is. Oh, Slide, you jackass. So, I wanted to say this, as we wrap this up, because we are up against it, as we usually get to on these shows.
Very quickly.
I did want to say this. Two points on heroes that aren't useless. It is so great to be able to get through an entire hour-long show about pointless comic book characters and finally not have to feel like I have to convince people that Aquaman is not a pointless comic book character anymore.
Absolutely. Blue Snowman from Wonder Woman.
That's a pointless character.
He's a pointless comic book character.
You know who else? And the other point I wanted to make, and I was having this conversation with Lacey the other day. You know who isn't a pointless character? And everybody gives him a bad rap. Is Cypher.
You know, I actually saw Cypher on a list of lamest superheroes, and I have to disagree.
That is bullshit. Cypher's awesome.
If you want to have like you know your X-Men Blue and your X-Men Gold, and then maybe you have like an X-Men Green or something that's the group that stays home,
right?
And does the non? I mean, you know, even the FBI.
He's support.
Yeah, I mean the CIA has a lot of field agents, but they've also got people who sit and type, and they do good service as well. So yeah, you know, you need him there for support and ciphering up stuff and languages and stuff.
I'd rather have him around than Forge's dumbass. Sorry.
I'd rather have him than Dupe. Now, that's a bad character. Dupe.
Dupe. Yeah, that is a bad character.
Had and has no place in the Marvel Universe. Vengeance is another character we could do without. It was just an excuse to have another Ghost Rider-esque character.
Uh-huh. Yes, it absolutely was. Oh, alright, alright. Alright. We're out of time. Gotta put a pin
Carnage.
In it. Oh, any of those symbiote villains that came out about the same time, like during the Carnage Wars or the whatever the
Maximum
Carnage. Oh, the Spider Slayers. It's just any of those. God, it's awful. Alright, alright. I'm putting a pin in it.
All right.
So what do we got next? Next week.
Next week, we are we're going to take a journey into misery. So next week, prepare yourselves, because this was originally conceived to be kind of the, I guess I'd say, you know, the worst writers, the worst artists, the bad concepts.
Yeah.
But it just, it kept growing and evolving from there to the point where there's just, there's so many approaches to take. So we're going to talk about experimental styles. We're going to talk about at length, ad nauseum, about, Rob Liefeld?
Well, Image, you know,
yeah.
There's this whole idea that, you know, good comic writers and artists can go bad. Bad comic book writers and artists, they can get better or they can stay bad. you know, there are, you know, everybody goes through their blue period, and we are definitely going to delve into that for sure. Like, just bad concepts, bad ideas. You know, why did you do that? Why is that happening? You know, why did you go that route? You know, just, there's all kinds of things we can talk about there. So it's going to be a fun show. With that being said, Cole, do you have any plugs that you would like to make?
Absolutely. Of course, as always, we're coming to you through the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. And in addition to all of the great features at JediCole.com, you can also occasionally find myself and the Rancor Pits, Eddie Medina, also of Figments. Over at DeepElmOnAir.com every other Sunday with the Rancor Pit Live. Yes, we actually broadcast a live show 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. every other Sunday. So be sure and check that out if you can. There, if you're in the area, in the Dallas area by chance, or anywhere in Texas for that matter, for this particular plug, visit Convention Awareness Project Texas to find out about conventions all over the Lone Star State at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com. At both the Jedi Cole Universe and Convention Awareness Project, you can learn about an event coming up in the Dallas area. It will have already started by the time you're hearing this. We'll be just a couple of days old. Our friend Christy, the Jedi Goddess from the Jedi Goddess Presents over at Deep Elm on Air every Sunday. They're the second show in the Sunday morning lineup, or the Sunday lineup, rather. It's afternoon by the time those guys start. But she and Dallas's own Art Love Magic, the amazing art collective there, are hosting in a galaxy far, far away a unique gallery show that's just chock full of local artists, interpretation of Star Wars and all kinds of other sci-fi, fantasy, film, cosplay, comic, and gaming motifs, themes, and such. But there's also, in addition to all this amazing art, there are movie nights, and there's art and wine nights where you can go and paint and try out your artistic hand there. And, of course, this is going to be running August 20th through August 30th. And if you can't make it August 30th, don't feel bad, because Eddie Medina and I will be there.
Yay!
We'll be hosting a panel with Christy. So if you can, make it out. And like I said, there's plenty of information on both sites. And there is actually an interview with Christy on the Jedi Cole Universe site. And, of course, you can find Andy and myself and Mrs. Jedi Cole and Rick, the president ad nauseum of the United States of Geekdom, over UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com, where you never know what we're going to be talking about next.
That's true. Unless you do know what we're going to be talking about next, which, by the way, is The Cosby Show.
There you go.
The Cosby Show.
I'm super
excited about The Cosby Show.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, right now the Chevy Chase episode is up, and that will be followed, I think, by one other, and then The Cosby Show, on its heels.
That's right. The Cosby Show.
The Cosby Show.
The Cosby Show. So, with that being said, join us next week when we... go into creators and concepts that might have fallen a little flat or taken a nosedive. So until next week, say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, and we'll talk to you soon. As always, buy, collect, and enjoy comics, even the bad ones, because they're still fun. They're still fun. You got to support them. There's Angelo from prison. Yeah. From prison. Well, that's where he is now after taking one and a half eyes out of a guy.
Yeah. But they tend to let him off on good behavior because he's got a heart of gold.
Good night, everybody.